So once again, just to reiterate what we began with. Yishmael is thrown out of his house that he grew up in for the first 13 years of his life because he was mitzachek, he was playing, he was laughing. Sarah says, throw him out. Avraham does not want to throw him out, but eventually has to throw him out because God says do it. What was this man's sin? What did he do wrong for that reason that indeed God says to throw him out? Rashi comes and says, the man was guilty of the big three. What are the big three? There are three sins in Judaism that a Jew must die for. Everything else, we believe that life is more important than religion. We don't sacrifice our children for religion. We don't sacrifice ourselves for our religion. Life is more important than religion. First comes life, then comes religion, and then comes everything else. However, there are three sins that a Jew has to give his life for. Namely, adultery, idolatry, and murder. A guy comes up to you and says, I'm going to kill you if you don't kill her. You say, my blood is more known red than her, you have to kill me. You don't kill someone else to live. You also do not engage in idolatry, you don't engage as well in adultery. Now, having said that, as you can see from Rashi, he is doing all these things in the house. That's mitzachek. He's committing adultery, and he's committing murder. And he's doing it in front of the house where Yitzchak can see it. Yishmael.
At age 12.
Indeed, the man's 13 years old. Excuse me? Well, we know very well that nowadays, at least they say, the hormones began to rise a little earlier than once upon a time because of everything on TV. But I personally believe that every person is different. There's no question that adultery can also mean not necessarily the sexual act of adultery, but rather raping a woman without that part of the actual sexual conduct. It can happen very easily. But whatever it might mean, the moral conduct sexually with women and maybe with himself, as you pointed out, mitzachek.
Okay.
He's also committing idolatry, which is of course counter to Judaism. He's committing murder, and he's doing it all not in secret, not away from home, not going on business trips, but at the house. So Rashi points out mitzachek means he's doing the big three.
Where is murder?
What do you mean, where was one?
He committed murder, you said.
Yeah.
Oh, what do you, who do you murder?
We have no idea. We'll get to that point right now.
Doesn't he have to do all three, or can he just do one?
The man's doing all three. When is he doing all three? We don't know. Now let me explain a little bit about Rashi and the Medrash and what this all comes from. The written Bible sometimes leaves ambiguous statements, ambiguous episodes that we don't know anything about. There are various traditions, both in the rabbinic literature as well as in common and modern literature, as to exactly what happened and how we fill in the gaps. So, for example, the whole story about how you take a slave and you sleep with her and you bore yourself a child is very strange. According to Judaism, at least, you're supposed to marry a woman, be committed to her, and God's willing, have children together, which is an expression of your love. So how exactly do you take a slave? If you look at the other cultures that lived at the time of the Bible, for example, the Murabi culture, you'll see that was exactly the custom. Maybe it's because of what you pointed out. We need some sort of a test to see who's not fertile. Or, that was the custom. If you can't have children for a certain amount of years, you take your slave. We don't know that from the Bible. The Bible just tells us that's what happened. But you have to look around the Bible, both in the rabbinic texts that are traditions from generation to generation, as well as the modern texts, that came out nowadays with the Moravian cultures and others, to see what was happening. This is a rabbinic tradition based on many midrashes in the Talmud as to what his sin was. Having said all that, sometimes the midrash exaggerates to prove a point. So it could be he wasn't doing all three, or not all three at once. There's no question he was doing the gravest sins that we know. Which one exactly? Obviously, when the Medrash comes and says he's doing all three, they mean to say he's doing a grave sin.
But isn't it inappropriate to attribute sinful behavior in the absence of evidence?
Is it inappropriate? That's exactly it. In other words, the evidence is basically to be there, to videotape it, and to show it on CNN. That's the evidence we know of today. Obviously, because it wasn't there then, things were documented in other ways, namely in text, in traditions that were passed from family to family. And indeed, those traditions have lived throughout the generations, and that's basically what Rashi is expressing. He's expressing those traditions that have been passed from generation to generation as to what his sin was. That's basically Rashi, and as I said at the beginning, he's harsh.
When did Rashi
very live? Harsh. Yeah.
When did Rashi live? What was, around what time was he?
12th century. 12th century Rashi lived in mainly in Germany, as well as in the Rhine, those areas of Europe. He was an Ashkenazic Jew, not a Sephardic Jew. He wrote the most amazing commentary both on the Chumash, on the five books of Moses, as well as on the Talmud. I don't believe any Jewish boy or girl learns either without his commentary, at least at the early ages. When you get older, you try to learn it on your own, but when you're early, at early ages, you need Rashi. I once heard a great rabbi say that if we lost Maimonides, if we lost all these texts, we could live. If we lost Rashi on the Talmud, we wouldn't be able to live as a Jewish nation. So that's how important Rashi is paraphrased throughout the Jewish literature, at least. That's Rashi. Rashi, though, is expressing the Medrash, which is much more ancient than Rashi. Yeah. Absolutely correct. Absolutely. There is no Torah yet. There is absolutely no, I would say, there isn't a sin in the way we view sin. We view sin as God said no. Sin then was what society said no to, or what your common practice said no to. In Abraham's home, there was one God. And that's considered a sin compared to Abraham's home. I am sure and positive that idolatry compared to the cultures in that time was not considered a sin. The opposite is true. Maybe it was considered the common practice. There's no question. However, when we say idolatry here, I don't believe it means the sin of bowing down to idols. I believe it means what idolatry stands for. If you look at different cultures that were during that time in the Middle East, I once did a course on it in college, and I'm forgetting the names. Maybe it will come back to me. There was a notion of idolatry that for the god, you're supposed to sacrifice your children. That was a form of idolatry that's obviously contrary to everything we believe in. Not just because God said no, because how can you sacrifice your children for a god that you don't even see? Yes, and we're going to deal with that, God willing, in our next Torah forum, which is a great question. What did Abraham do? What exactly did God tell him not to do? What was the whole story over there? Anyway, to sum up, Rashi's interpretation is harsh, very off, I would say, the literal meaning of the text, and no question in my mind, he's going to great extremes, based on rabbinic texts, to try to explain exactly what happened. Let's go on to the next interpretation, that I believe is a little nicer, the Ralbag. Ralbag is a little later than Rashi, but again, of the same generation. Mitzachek has connotations of mockery. He basically was making fun of Yitzchak. He would say, Yitzchak, you know, big shot, I'm older than you. What do you think? Because you were born to Sarah, who got the extra hay in her name, and God gave you all these promises, you're greater than me. I'm older than you, first of all, so watch out. Second of all, I am the eldest son, so watch out. Basically, he was making fun of little Yitzchak. Little Yitzchak begins his life. I'm sure everyone's smothering him. Everyone looks at this guy and says, look at this 99-year-old mother, and this is what we have. And he's making fun of him. So it's getting to an extent that the family can't go on. They're sitting at a dinner table, and all he's doing is making fun of poor Yitzchak. And Yitzchak is one of these kids, you know, the nerd that doesn't know how to give a good one back when you make fun of him. Like when you say you're four-eyed, he doesn't know how to say you're an idiot. So from that perspective, he's the kind of guy, he doesn't know how to deal with it. So Sarah's seeing it. She sees it can't go on. Finally she says, that's it, it can't go on, let's separate. A very normal family story. The kids don't get along. It's getting to rivalry, where they just cannot sit down at a dinner table. They can't live together. They're in separate rooms, but all they're doing is fighting. And not to mention the fact that if you know what families are like, you have a 13-year-old Ishmael. I don't know how old Yitzchak is when he's weaned. He's obviously not 8 days old. But let's say 3, 4, 5. And obviously it's not a fair fight. And the Ralbag basically comes and says that Sarah takes a stand and says, throw him out. Now we can understand why Abraham comes along and says, throw him out. It's because of fighting. Brothers fight, sisters fight. We all fight with our brothers and sisters too. This is why you got to throw the man out. And God says, throw him out. That's why you understand why God had to intercede. Very nice, fits into the text very nicely. Comes a more contemporary interpreter of the Bible, Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, number three. Word of background, Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch was a German rabbi at the turn of the last century, end of the 19th century, going into the 20th century. Obviously, his perspective is a little more contemporary. And this is what he says. He says that the whole rivalry here has to do with what Bruce pointed out. What's the word Yitzchak mean in Hebrew? Not to laugh, but future tense. He will laugh. Who Yitzchak? He will laugh. What does Mitzachek mean? Laughing, present tense. The whole problem here is laughter. There's two different kinds of laughter. There's laughter right now, and there's laughter in the future. There's the guy that gets the joke and laughs, and there's the guy that takes 2 minutes to get it, and then he laughs. When you're ready saying the second joke, he's laughing about the first. That's basically it. But Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch goes on and says, Yitzchak's whole life is a story of peculiar extremes. When do we laugh? When something unexpected happens. You're hearing a story, and all of a sudden there's a punchline, and it's out of the ordinary, and that's why we laugh. He says, Yitzchak's whole life is out of the ordinary. The man's born when his father's 100, his mother's 99. So his whole life is unexpected. He's put on the altar, almost got killed, but doesn't get killed. The whole life is extremes, like a good joke. A joke goes to extremes. Yishmael is very normal. At the time, you take a slave, you sleep with her, you have a boy. 87 years old, if you look at the ages of the last two parshas, you understand 87 years old is like nowadays I would say 40 years old. Because people live long lives now. So 87 years old, okay. But 99 years old apparently was already over the hill. So now we're talking about a situation. For a man I was talking about. But for a woman we'll get to. We don't know how old Hagar is at this point. Now comes the interesting part. He says that basically the Jewish nation is a Jewish nation, a nation of extremes. We should have been dead a long time ago and we're still here. Yishmael is a very normative, rational kind of guy. Mitzachek. He was born in a normal age. He lived a normal life. And now, it doesn't work. He can't have an extreme living with a normal nation. It's like taking a Jew who's gone through the pogroms, gone through the Holocaust, God forbid, and putting him together as a roommate with a kid that was born in 1977. He had a state of Israel, he had security, he had no anti-Semitism, and this person went through a living hell. So that's basically the story here. Very, very interesting, and that's basically the story. The story of cultures. Culture that's so normative can't live with a culture that's based on belief. On belief in the unexpected. The belief that the Jewish nation will survive. That's basically the third, and I believe the fifth interpretation, which was given by my own Rebbe, Rabbi Riskin. Basically, two cultures. He will laugh, and he laughs. The fourth interpretation I want to bring tonight is the Ibn Ezra, contemporary of Rashi, but a Sephardic Jew. Actually, a very interesting Sephardic Jew. Not only was he into writing interpretations on the Bible, he wrote modern poems. Like then in Spain, it was very common to write poems, beautiful literature. And he wrote it on the flowers, you know, the roses are red, violets are blue kind of poems. And obviously, he was very, very involved in the common culture, not just in Torah studies. One of my heroes. Anyway, what does the Ibn Ezra say? He said, laughing means, very simply, he was playing. Yitzchak and Yishmael got along wonderfully. But here's the problem. If Yitzchak and Yishmael get along wonderfully, poor Sarah's going to say, no one will see the difference. They both wear kippahs, they both wear tzitzis, they both look like good Jewish boys, but they understand this is the daughter, this is the son of the slave, and this is the son of the non-slave. This is the main wife's son, and this is the second wife's son. Right? This is the first class, and this is the second class. Yisrael's very concerned. Comes along Avram and says, big deal! Let's be friends, make amends, now it's time to live together. And God comes out and says, throw him out. Why does God come out and say, throw him out? I don't know. Very, very peculiar, because they're playing together. That's the Ibn Ezra. Finally, I just want to bring one more contemporary interpretation about of a rabbi that I believe is one of the most famous rabbis in Israel today, He gives public classes via the, used to be very, very big. He used to give it via the radio at the time. It was very big. A guy's giving a lesson live on the radio on Wednesday night on the Parsha. And he's very charismatic. Even if you're driving in your car on the highway, you understand that you get the lesson. Right? I'm sure, Dr. Levy, you've heard him many times. He's very charismatic. In fact, in our Hebrew school, in our joint Hebrew school, we're using his sheets that he's writing every week, that's called Parents and Kids, to learn Parents and Kids together. And it's very beautiful. It's done beautifully. There's no question he's very charismatic. And he's a big interpreter of the Bible. So that's what he gives most of his classes on. Now, what does this man come and say? He says, this is basically Jews and Palestinians. What does the Bible say about Yishmael? Let's go back. What does God say about Yishmael? He is going to be a wild ass of a man. Or, as we said before, uncontrollable. His hand against every man, and every man's hand against him, and he shall dwell over against all his kinsmen. His hands against everyone, everyone against him. Comes along Rav Moti alone and says, that's the problem. What does Sarah say? Look on page 1. Sarah says, deport this guy, for he will not inherit together with my son with Yitzchak. He comes and interprets. The problem here is not that Sarah doesn't want him to inherit. Sarah says, Yishmael is incapable of inheriting together with anyone. He has to have it all. That's what the Bible says. It can't have to be in everything. So the problem is, dear Avraham, that you brought up a son who doesn't know how to share. So he won't inherit together, won't be let's be friends, make amends. Because he won't be able to. That's the way he is. He has to have it all or nothing. You give him a little bit, he wants more. It's like salami. You cut a piece of salami, you need another piece. There's never one, you never cut one piece of salami and put it back in the refrigerator. That's the way he sees it. So therefore, you can't have them in the same house, they cannot inherit together, you have to call it quits. Goodbye. We just gave 5 different interpretations as to exactly what the word mitzachek means. Whatever it might mean, there's a family rivalry, there's no question that Yishmael is doing something that's not exactly acceptable, whatever it might be. According to some, he's just playing together, and it's hard to understand what the problem is, but according to most, he's doing something acceptable that it's hard to live with him. Let's just try to make it a little more contemporary. A kid comes home one day from school, he's wearing an earring in his 2 ears. Alright, men wear earrings nowadays. Not such a big deal. The next day, the earring shows up in his nose as well. A week or two later, he's growing his hair very long. At night, he's hanging out in the wrong places. He's not coming to synagogue anymore. God forbid he's meeting the wrong kind of wife. And as time goes on, you can understand that he's doing everything that you taught him not to do. He's a rebel. Meanwhile, you have other kids in the house that are younger. These kids are seeing what he's doing. And they see mommy and daddy see this little Yishmael come with his 2 earrings, and nothing happens. So maybe they'll pierce their ears. But they're still little, so you tell them no, 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 and they're fine. Then he has a 3rd piercing, and they're already saying, well, I don't know. He said 2, no, no, no. What about 3? 3 also is no, no, no. Oh, okay. And then this goes on and on. And now the parents have a big problem. Because you're trying to raise your kids in one way, and there's a kid in the house that's actively perpetuating the opposite of everything you're teaching. He's a rebel against everything. If you wear a suit and tie, he's wearing ripped jeans. If you teach your kid every morning to brush your teeth, he walks around every day and doesn't take a shower. If you teach your kid, do not go to the bars at night, do not drink, that's exactly where he's going. He's coming back drunk, and all the kids are seeing it. And obviously, no parent can just sit around and do nothing. So obviously there's fights, there's vocal fights, all the kids are hearing it, there's a dysfunctional home. And as a matter of fact, when you go back to Shul the Shabbos, and to the whole book of Bereishis, it's a whole episode of dysfunctional homes and how they dealt with it. Every home was dysfunctional. Remember, Rebecca gives birth to 2 sons. They're dysfunctional already in the womb. They don't get along. Then you have 12 kids with the biggest fight of them all. 10 brothers want to kill one of them. Cain and Abel didn't get along either. Dysfunctional homes. And how the Bible dealt with it. And that's why I love the Bible so much. Because the Bible doesn't give you what my doctor once said. The medicine is chocolate covered. Don't worry. Eat. We all know the medicine is not chocolate covered, it's nice and bitter, and that's the way it is, and it's going to make you feel better. The shot hurts, but it's going to make you feel better. The Bible is telling you that it's as it was. It calls the kid a wild ass of a man, It says concubine, it tells you everything, and says, this is the reality of life. Not everything is hunky-dory. How did you deal with it? And that's how I'm going
to
end.
Maybe they're just making an excuse. The Sarah obviously wanted her son to be better. And she concocted some story for Ishmael to get rid of him.
Yeah, that's exactly what the Moti Elon's saying, but you're just saying that, hey, he did nothing wrong, and Sarah wants it all. Very legitimate.
What's lovely with the mitzvah could have been that it seems like they sent him out in the panic. They sent him out with a death sentence. Could he have done something, for instance, if he had been very cruel and then he left? Might that have said something extreme about his personality that he could no longer trust him or tolerate him?
Could very well be. That's what Rashi is basically saying, that he was laughing in the sense that he was doing things that we all think is the biggest no-nos of society, but he's laughing. It's like the same way you go to the store, give a dollar, even though it's $1.25, and take a can of pop because whatever. $0.25 is going to miss it, or you don't put the money in the meter, you know you're supposed to. He's killing someone and coming home and washing his hands off of the blunt and laughing about it. Could very well be. Now, I just want to go and say the man was doing something that's going against his parents. Not his parents, his father. Probably his mother too. How did they deal with it and what happened later? Look on the third page, and this is the aftermath. What's the next site? This Bruce did not point out, and that's why I said I'm going to continue from his point. The next sighting of Ishmael is at the end of, as I said, not this week's Parsha next, but the following. Many things happen in the middle. The binding of Isaac. The finding of the wife of Isaac. Isaac gets married, and then it says, Abraham died. Comes the biggest funeral, I believe, in history. Abraham was the biggest outreacher that ever lived. He had people in the house, day in and day out, an open home, as we read. The man didn't stop. I'm sure at his funeral, there wasn't any standing room. I'm sure Yitzchak was the good boy, remember? The good boy that was blind to the eye. He gets up, he's going to give a eulogy, he's going to make everyone part and cry. And who shows up at the funeral, with his two earrings, and his long hair, and his broken jeans? I quote from the Bible, Abraham breathed his last and died in good old age, an old man and full of years, and was gathered to his people, namely, those many people that mourned him. Isaac and Ishmael, his sons, buried him in the cave of Machpelah, that same cave that he bought in Hebron. Isaac and Ishmael, his sons. Now you ask yourself a very, very funny question. Whatever Abraham's own thoughts were about deporting Ishmael, he follows God's words. Remember? He deports the guy. The last time Ishmael saw his father, he gave his mother a little water, a little bread, and said goodbye. That's his last scene from his own home. He spent 13 years in. And he shows up at his father's funeral after his father almost gave him a death sentence by sending him into the desert with only a little water. What happened all those years? The Bible doesn't tell us. As I said before, the Medrash, the rabbinic text of tradition, fills in the gap with a fascinating Medrash that those that were in my synagogue in Rosh Hashanah know it, because I used it in one way, and I don't want to use it a little differently. We're on source number 2 on page 3. After 3 years, Abraham went to see Ishmael and swore to Sarah that he would not descend from the camel in the place where Ishmael dwelt. What does that mean, he won't descend from the camel in the place of Ishmael dwelt? I'm going to try to paraphrase it. Avram says, I miss my poor Ishmael. Remember the poor Ishmael that when God promised him a son, he said, I don't need a son, I got Ishmael. The poor Ishmael, he didn't want to deport out of the house. I miss poor Ishmael. Sarah says, hey, God said, don't defy him. Don't go there. This goes on for years and years. Every year, he misses him. Finally, I can see the truth. Sarah says, you can go see him, but don't ascend from the camel. Go in your car, come to the door, take a sighting, say hello, do not kiss him, and do not hug him. To paraphrase it, you can see him on the webcam, but you can't go see him personally. Okay? I think it's the harshest thing you can ask from any father. Don't hug and kiss your son. This continues. Avram does it. He arrives there at midday, he finds his wife. He says, where's Sonny Boy? Obviously, where's Ishmael? She said to him, he has gone with his mother to fetch fruits and dates from the wilderness. He said to her, give me a little bread and a little water, for my soul is weary from the journey through the desert. She said to him, I have neither bread nor water. Now let's face it. You have no bread nor water in the house? What are you talking about? He went to fetch fruits and dates. Namely, he went to fetch some snacks. He went to get chips for the evening movie. He didn't go and get food. Bread and water means the chicken, the dinner. He has no food in the house. Obviously, she's not hospitable. I don't have anything to give you. So Avram says, okay, no problem. But when he comes home, say an old man came. Indeed, Yishmael comes home, his wife tells him the story, and comes along and Midrash says, the son of a wise man is like half a wise man. Namely, if your father's a doctor, then you, even though you're stupid, you're probably a half a doctor. You know, you can't grow up in a doctor's home and be totally, totally brainless. So, the son of a wise man is like half a wise man. I love that saying. Yishmael understood and sent her away. He divorces his wife. He said, what is it? An old man comes, he asks for bread and water, and you say, that's nothing, get out of here. What's the matter with you? Obviously, Yishmael doesn't know it's his father, nothing. All we could say is that Yishmael, the wild beast, still has some elementary manners. The man sees an old man come, he doesn't say no. Anyway, his mother took him for him a wife from her father's household, and his name was Fatima. As we can see, the arranged marriage continues. He doesn't date. His mother gives him a wife. He marries her. 3 years later, Avram has the same episode. He misses his dear son, Yishmael. Sarah again says, that's it, it's becoming a fashion. No. This goes on fights for days and weeks. Finally, the same thing. Go in the car, do not roll down the window, see him coming out of school, see him coming out of work, and go. Or if Yishmael's committing idolatry and murder, see him kill someone and go. See the murder happen and go. Do not cuss him, do not hug him. The same thing happens. He goes to the house, new wife, but this time, of course, she gave him food. Yishmael knew how to pick the wife. Probably at the date, he said, would you give an old man food and water? He said, sure, great. Now, comes the big part. Avraham arose and prayed before the Holy One. For his son in the house of Yishmael was filled with all good things, with money and blessings. Avraham prays for the welfare of Yishmael. When Yishmael returned, she told him the story of Yishmael. He told him the story and Yishmael understood until that moment. Avram's mercy extended to him, as a father has mercy upon his children. I have to say, many times when I read this medrash, it's very hard for me to not shed a tear. Of a father that after so many years cannot detach from his son. The son that was a rebel. The son that ruined his whole house. The son that embarrassed him. The son that only brought misery. The son that as soon as you deported him, everything's hunky-dory. Isaac lives a wonderful life. He sees Isaac get married to a wonderful girl. He's at the wedding, he dances at the wedding, and he dies, as we see, a good life. But he couldn't stop thinking about his son of the slave, the degraded one, the one that ruined his whole house. And 3 years later, he keeps on going, not hugging and kissing him, because he knew if that happened, that would be it. He has to come back home. And that can't happen. Rather, he extended himself as much as possible to his children. And that's what I believe the message of the Bible is, when it says that Yishmael and Avraham buried their father. He extended himself as much as possible. The kid is murdering. He's in jail. But do you visit him in jail? Or do you cut up all contacts? The Bible says you have to make a decision. You can close the door, but don't lock it. Or you leave the door open to peek. Don't cut off connections. So many years later, Yishmael still had a vision of his father when he saw his house blessed. He saw it came from God. He couldn't believe his father is still thinking of him. Now we all have kids that sometimes don't exactly do what we want. I still have very small kids, but it happens to me too. But I've seen many times in my life kids that were brought up to be Orthodox Jews that decided to take a different path in life. And it wasn't conservative Judaism or reform Judaism, to say the least. I've seen many, many kids that, as we say in Hebrew, went off the path. The question is, how do parents deal with it? How do teachers deal with it? How does the community deal with it? I believe the Bible is telling us, don't extend yourself totally, but don't also deport totally. If you have to deport from the home, it might be necessary. Extend yourself as much as you can, but never cut off connections. And indeed, God did not cut off connections with Yishmael. He promised him the 12 princes, and he gives him the 12 princesses. And indeed, as we can see in Avraham's will, at the tractate says, in tractate Sanhedrin, in the Gemara, despite the fact that Avraham gives everything he has to Yitzchak, the verse concludes that gifts were still given to Yishmael, the son of the concubine. At his will, at his dying death, Avraham says, I'm giving you my house, I'm giving you my car, I'm giving you my business, but I want you to give $50,000 to Yishmael. He's my son, I'm not giving him everything. He rebelled against me. I'm extending myself as much as possible. That's what I believe the Bible is telling us about how to deal with the bad seeds. Regardless of what he did, did he just play innocently, or did he play a little too much? With himself, with other women, did he kill, did he murder? You have to extend yourself as much as possible and never give up on a fellow Jew, regardless of his behavior. The answer might be put him in jail. He's too dangerous to live in society, but make sure to supply him with kosher food. Put him in jail, but give him a shofar for Rosh Hashanah. Put him in a mental institution, but light candles at his table every Friday night. Never cut off connections, and yet do take a stand as parents. Any questions?